Hello, everyone.
Hello.
And welcome to
Queeriosities.
That was a little lighter today.
It was a little lighter.
Yeah, I feel like we're starting light.
Yeah.
And we're not going to remain light this entire time.
Not today.
We just have a lot of things that we want to bring up today that make us fired up a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's more like passion.
We're passionate today, family.
Yeah.
And we hope that you stick around for the ride and that maybe you feel angry too.
Yeah.
At the end of this one.
Or at least interested enough to kind of like start taking some action.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Conscientious. Well, I can't say the word.
Whoa.
You're going to have to do
conscientious.
Choices.
Great.
Thanks. Good teamwork.
Ultimate teamwork.
Yeah.
Speaking of teamwork, so we're not going to bore you with a lot of kind of intro snippet stories today, but I have one that is really the true testament of friendship.
It happens here and there.
Guys, Kayla, she really showed up this week, and I'm going to tell you why. So, as you know, Cortado is
our go-to. It's the number one. It's the get-through-the week fix.
Oh,
it's so good.
It is the get-through-the-week fix.
Yeah.
We love it so much. They know Kayla by name. They know Kayla's order.
They know my order. They don't know me by name.
But I picture them knowing you by name, and it brings me joy.
I feel like they might know my like loyalty number.
Oh, for sure. Okay. Probably.
Yeah.
So, Kayla texts and tells me that, I think it was Wednesday.
Yeah.
Wednesday was Cortado Day.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to be a little bit late for school, but I get the text as soon as I wake up in the morning, and it brings me joy as I wake up.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I'm driving to school, I had an appointment in the morning. Kayla texts and tells me, oh my gosh, I bought Cortado and I dropped yours.
So what typically happens is that I don't take a tray and I have each coffee in each hand.
Yeah.
And then I would stack one on top of the other, which is, you know, precarious.
Mm.
But I've never had an issue until yesterday. So I got to the karaoke, I drove here perfectly fine, open up the car door on the other side, grab the coffees, stack them. The door isn't even closed, and all of a sudden, one lands on the ground, spills everywhere, and I'm like, oh no, it was Colleen's? What am I going to do?
And then, what am I going to do, pops in her head. And you'd think a regular response would be, you know what, I buy her coffee all the time, today's just not the day, and I'll just bring her a coffee tomorrow morning instead. No, people, she decides, she goes up to her classroom, drops her own coffee off, goes back downstairs, tells our administrator, I have a prep first period, so I have to go out. I drop Colleen's coffee. She's telling me this via text. I'm responding in capital letters. Please don't go back out of the school. I don't need a coffee that badly. I thought she was just going to go to McDonald's, like that's down the road. Guys, she drives all the way back to Cortado, which is on the way to Hammond's Plains.
Mm-hmm.
It's a solid 10 to 12 minutes. All the way back to school and delivers me the second hot decaf coffee to start my day.
I can't imagine going and getting you, like, another coffee. We're invested in Cortado, financially and emotionally at this point.
100%.
And I couldn't just deny you that coffee. Like, if I had spilled my own coffee, I'd go back and get another coffee.
Yeah, and I think that's what I mean. It's a testament to true friendship.
Well,
and there's a part of me that's like, ooh, would I have done that same thing? I'm not sure. And now, yes, 100%, because you've proven that this is the, you know, this is the standard, that we work with. But I don't know if I would have been as nice as you. So, listeners, if you can think about just your little acts of kindness, and when you do that thing for your friend continuously thinks about it, it fills them with joy, and they share the story with everyone they talk to. That's what I've done in the last 24 hours.
Hopefully it was a good coffee.
Oh, it was delicious. It always is. Cortado. We're still waiting on that sponsorship, Cortado, if you like our stories.
I haven't told them about the podcast.
I know.
If they ever stumble upon it, they're going to be surprised.
That every single episode we talk about them. Okay.
We're picking up off the last, not last episode, but two episodes ago. We started with our sports. We got into it. We didn't finish the topic. We've got some other points that are really important to us that we want to talk about.
And in the episode, part one of sports, when we were talking about all the different subjects, I remember saying, like, and we're going to expand on this one next time, and we're going to expand on this one next time, because there's so many angles.
Yeah.
And each of those angles, you can really go pretty deep. And so we're going to start. There's one quote that you actually said in the in part one of sports that I want to full circle back to.
Yeah.
Which is, we were talking about locker rooms, sports in general, but specifically locker rooms, and you said, what is happening in the boys' locker room that makes it so unsafe for girls to be in that same room?
Yeah.
So this is huge.
And I think that came from, like, me knowing about certain girls growing up that would not be allowed in the boys' hockey locker room. I think that's where my idea came from.
Yeah.
But I think what we talked about is that it's a heteronormative practice.
Yes.
To separate the boys and the girls. And I think it's out of fear that, like, we automatically think that the moment that we leave boys and girls together in any space, if it's unsupervised, we're basically, they're going to have sex.
Yeah. Yes. And there's so many things wrong with that.
Yeah.
Right? So you just said it's heteronormative. So that is the assumption that, like, you think by avoiding boys and girls that you're putting a halt to sex in general? That, like, could not be more wrong.
No, but
you're assuming every kid is straight and they're going to want, yeah. First of all, they're going to have that desire and they're going to automatically think of sex as soon as they see the opposite gender or opposite sex.
Yeah, so we're automatically sexualizing everyone.
Ugh.
And teaching them that that's the practice. Like, you can't be left alone in a room, because that should be, I guess, is the message that we're sending them. It's going to happen.
Mm.
So time and time again, that's what we're kind of sending them.
And I think a big thread, audience, that you're going to hear today is just that, is we're starting to sexualize and we're starting this division so young in public schools that even when change is happening outside of schools for the better, and we will mention some things that are happening that are more progressive, creating this norm from such a young age is so deeply destructive,
mm-hmm.
right? For the misogyny of sport, which I know that it's sometimes hard to differentiate the queerness and the misogyny, right? So the homophobia, the misogyny, because really the seed is the same.
Yeah.
And so not only is it sexualizing the children and assuming that all the kids are straight, it also breeds homophobia.
Yeah, because if you're in the locker room, everyone is the same sex, and you're the queer person in the room. A lot of queer people in that locker room, wherever it may be, will or could be fearful of coming out for fear that everybody's going to then think, oh, that person desires me, that person wants me, I can't change in that space with that person because of whatever could happen.
And that is really one of the strongest threads in homophobia, is that fear.
Yeah.
Right? Is when someone comes out, especially as gay or lesbian,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, exclusively,
mm-hmm.
the assumption by society is everyone else of that sex or gender feels like, oh my God, they must have wanted me at some point. It's so egotistical, right?
It's
when
so
it's like,
weird.
If you're straight, it doesn't mean that if you're a woman and you're straight, you don't want every single man you see. That's not how it functions,
yeah.
right? And so that fear on the flip side of homophobia is just so strong.
Yeah. So we've been thinking about it more.
Oh, man.
And I think one of the next steps for me personally is I think I'm going to write a letter to the NSSAF.
Ooh.
So the Nova Scotia Sports and Athletics Federation, something or other. I think that's the acronym.
Nova Scotia Sports and Athletics Federation?
I think that's what it is, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, because I kind of grew up really involved with the NSSAF. I played many sports, like, throughout school and in school and outside of school and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The one sport that I really kind of think about and question as to why we separate between sexes is cross country. Because it's not a physical sport in the sense of, like, it's not contact.
Yep.
You're basically, you have a starting point, you run the course that they've laid out, and then you stop.
Mm-hmm.
And they have it so that it's like junior boys, intermediate boys, senior boys, junior girls, intermediate girls, senior girls. And they don't all run the same distance. So it's the same course, but the boys will always run longer distances than the girls. And, you know, when you're like grade 7 running cross country, I'm not really sure that there's any deciding factors as to why the boys can obviously run longer than the girls. So it kind of like it also plants the seed that obviously the boys are more capable and throughout.
Ah.
But, like, when I was running in grade 7, I could have competed easily against the boys, because what's what's the differentiating factor? There wasn't really one at all. So I think that's the kind of starting point I'm going to start with the NSSAF, is like, okay, what are our next steps in making sure that we are more inclusive with sports? What are the steps that we are taking to make it more inclusive in general?
Because I think that's really interesting, because I find with people who want to be on the other side of the debate will often use like muscle mass or, you know, higher levels of testosterone, or like for wrestling, for example.
It's unsafe for girls to play with the boys.
Right. It's like, this factor of unsafe, but it's like running a longer distance
has nothing to do with safeness.
No, it's safety.
No one is more safe than the other in that regard.
And again, like we said last time, even in ball, like basketball, volleyball, it's like you're not playing basketball with your penis.
No.
Right? You're just
same
playing.
Same with cross country. You're not running penis first.
Gross.
Weird, wouldn't it?
Right. It would be weird.
So I think I'd rather like start having that conversation. If we're going to have some sort of an impact with sports and queerness and schools outside of school, I think I would like for people that are kind of organizing that to start taking some steps as to how we can be more inclusive with all athletes.
Ding, ding, ding. And I can feel my breath kind of shortening, because this makes me angry.
Yeah.
And I think, listeners, we're going to get a little serious for a quick sec. And I know that our podcast is supposed to be fun and chill and all the things.
It is.
It is, and it's also passionate, because we have to talk about real systemic issue. And so if we look at sports as a whole, the system must be dismantled.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's not an exaggeration, because it is a system that no longer functions in today's society. It is, by definition, exclusionary, right? There is a significant number of people in our world who do not fit into today's organization of sport, like the sports industry. On so many different levels. It is unsustainable the way that it currently is. And I also recognize, like when we talk about exclusionary practices in sport, this is not new. Right? It's not just against genderqueer people, right? It has been exclusionary to a certain point since forever, right? Children coming from lower income households certainly have not, and still do not, have the opportunity, the same opportunity for participation in sport as those with financial means. And if we look at like culturally, socially, the opportunities are not the same. Even today, a friend of mine who has a black boy who plays hockey at like a young level, like elementary level, the comments that this child hears on a regular basis because he's a black boy in hockey is grotesque, right? So although it's not written on paper, right, that is a clear social cultural discrimination that still happens in the practice of sport, right? And so the exclusion of sport isn't new, but when it comes to youth who do not subscribe to the gender binary, like who aren't boy or girl, man or woman, there is literally no place for them, right? Yes, things are kind of changing slowly, but like there are queer leagues, like we talked about a little bit ago. Like there are queer leagues for adults. There are like recreational sports where gender is no longer really a thing. Like people just play together.
Come play the sport.
Exactly. But if we think about in school, which is our environment as educators, there has been very little budging, right, when it comes to sex and gender inclusion in sports.
Yeah.
And it is very damaging.
Yeah. And I think we're starting to think about, like, okay, how can we improve this? Because if we think about, like you said, like the foundational systemic issues within sport, it was always kind of male-dominated. And that's why we saw, like, the development of more girl-based teams, because there was a need. And I automatically think back to like the hockey examples I had from growing up.
Mm.
Hockey was a boys' sport.
Yeah.
Girls wanted to play on the team, not necessarily the best way to go about it. There might have been one or two girls on the team. Slowly and slowly and slowly, there was more girls participating in hockey in rural Nova Scotia. So then they had the space to create a girls' team rather than think, okay, we'll just make it completely co-ed. Mm. So we had the development of girls' teams. And then now I think it kind of lends to the development of queer leagues or queer teams because we're not offering that space. So we weren't offering that space for girls, so then we created space for them because they were an issue. And now we're doing the same thing with queer teams. queer people didn't have a space within sports, so now we're creating a place for them in sports, but it's still like to the side.
Oh,
so you have your boys teams, your girls teams, your queer teams. Mm-hmm. But why can't we just have teams? I think that's the big issue right now.
I have two thoughts that kind of come out of that. And one is, and this is not a sell for women in sports so much, but we didn't have a girls' hockey team, I don't think, when I was in high school. And me and a bunch of girls were like, let's make one. Let's try out. For those of you who know me, I am the least athletic person. Not athletic. I just have no coordination.
You do have coordination. You're a dancer.
Dancer's a stretch.
Okay. Well, you have some coordination. You do yoga and whatnot.
Okay. Fine. There's some coordination there, but I got on the ice. I don't know. I must have borrowed my little brother's gear. I have no idea. And I got on the ice because we were passionate that there'd be a girls' hockey team at our high school. And I also had a crush on the teacher who was the team, or the coach, so it was a whole thing. And then they asked me to skate backwards.
And you were like, no.
I was like, nope, I can't do it.
We're only skating forwards.
See you. I was like, and goodbye. I don't think this is my thing.
So that was like the beginning and the end of your hockey career.
But I also remember, so yes, that was the beginning and the end. It was a solid 10 minutes on the ice. And I also do remember the narrative around girls in the high school being on a hockey team was always that they were gay.
Oh.
Right? And that was always the thing, that it was a way to make fun of and be homophobic toward girls.
Yeah, because
right? Or like to sexualize the like lesbian.
I think we talked about that before. As soon as a girl presents as athletic, she's automatically less attractive to the opposite sex.
Ooh,
for whatever
interesting.
Reason.
Yeah.
So if you have a really strong, physically fit rugby player,
yeah,
less attractive. Which is like, to a lot of people, unfortunately, and hopefully, like, over time, like everything else, we kind of change the narrative and we view that as like empowering, like, wow.
Oh, totally. But that's again that similar seed of misogyny and homophobia.
Yeah.
Because the misogyny is girls are to be like small and delicate and like flowers who are really precious, right?
Not competitive.
Not competitive. Like, just sit and be pretty for me.
Yes.
Right? And so, this amazing, like, powerful, empowered female rugby player,
yeah,
which is like, oh my gosh.
Great.
Right? Is the opposite of that.
That person still can be straight and attractive.
100%.
Yes.
But then my other thought, too, when you were talking about that, is we have a role to play. And I think that's maybe what makes me so passionate, is like, there are not enough people, and I don't know, but in my community, there's not enough people just talking about this. And we, at our age, are the people who make the change, right? When you and I look at like the demographics of who's listening to this podcast,
yeah,
there's a large chunk of people our age, 34 to 44,
yeah,
right? We could say a large percentage of them are currently raising children.
Yeah, so they're basically the impact, the future impact. So the changes they make, or the actions that they take,
yes,
could have an impact on how sports are organized. And it can be through simple steps. Like, if you were signing your kid up for a sport, and they have a division of sexes, and they're like at a very young age, you could question the organization. Why do they divide it? So if it's basketball, why can my daughter not play on the same team as my son? Why are they being divided?
Yeah, and I wonder what's even on a registration form. Like, if they say it's gender or if they say it's sex.
It would be interesting to see if it's kind of more open.
Mm.
But the boxes that we check on a form when we're signing a kid up for any sport could be a small way that we kind of take some action and question what we're doing.
And that's the thing. When we talk about people our age, like the people raising the next generation, it's like we advocate to make space for queer athletes, right? We are the people who can actually ensure that athletes, young people, do not have to be continuously re-traumatized for the simple desire to participate in sport.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that is huge. Like, asking about hormone testing, asking about confirming their genitalia, asking about, like, forcing the gender binary on these kids who don't associate to the gender binary.
And it's like gym class.
Oh, man alive.
So we're trying to get away from boys against girls.
Mm.
The boys are run this time, the girls on the other side. And then you have the genderqueer people, non-binary, whatever you want to say, standing in the middle saying, where do I get to participate?
And standing in front of a group of people with adults who are in charge and having to say at 12 years old, where do I participate? Where do I fit in? That's not nothing, right? And it's like,
We're forcing students, athletes, to make that decision, whether they're going to try out for the volleyball team or not. Well, if I want to try out for the volleyball team,
I have to lie.
I have to put myself in one of the categories that I actually don't belong in.
Yes.
So then a lot of them disassociate and they become less interested because they don't want to put themselves in that box. They don't feel welcome. They don't feel like they're seen and validated within a physical activity.
And I think doing that is also not easy, right? Like, there are so many kids avoiding phys ed class, which, can we not say, like, phys ed class is arguably one of the most important subjects in public school, right? Like, physical literacy, our children need, everyone needs so deeply, right?
And you probably should have more of in school.
100%. But they're avoiding this really important class and opportunity because they do not have a space, right? It's like, put yourself in the shoes of the 12-year-old. They do not have a bathroom. Or if they do, it is outside of the gym, it's way down the hall, it's using maybe like the staff bathroom or the one quote-unquote inclusive bathroom, which should not be titled as such.
Yeah, should be a bathroom.
Just a friggin' bathroom. Who has stalls in their home? Yeah. Nobody, right? But it's like, they have to go all the way down the hall, so all the other kids see them do that, so they're automatically targeted for leaving the room, right? And or they skip class, right? Like, there are kids who are hiding in the bathrooms during phys ed class. There are kids who are booking appointments inside and outside of school, so they do not need to expose themselves to this environment, right? And it's not about the individual teachers.
No.
It's about the systemic issues at the school and organization level.
So when we're talking about, like, small steps that people can take, and we talk about allies, one way to be a good ally is that if you see someone leaving the gym or leaving whatever to go to that inclusive bathroom that they're kind of led to have to go to, no, they don't really have a choice, a good ally would be someone that's like, I'm going to also change there. So that, you know, they could have their gender be like, I am female, I am a girl or whatever, but they're still going to go to that bathroom to be an ally to the other person that's going there as well.
And that's huge, because we talked about this. Being an ally is a verb.
Yeah.
You can't just title yourself ally and be hands-free, right?
I'm not homophobic. Therefore, I'm an ally.
No, that's not at all how it works. Allyship means you have action.
Yeah.
And also, you know, if you have 10, 12 other kids who you don't need to disclose your gender identity, you simply start going to the bathroom down the hall outside of the gym facilities. That's how you make a stand, because, you know, then people are late for class. Then people are saying, oh, interesting, maybe this is an issue that we should actually look at, because it doesn't affect one student, right? And all those other out students, all those other non-out students are watching this happen, right? And when it's not an empowering situation, it is bringing them further and further into the closet, as opposed to giving them the freedom to just be themselves, right? So these systemic issues are huge, and
creating safe space. A small step.
Yes.
Having a bathroom that's just a bathroom, or a locker room that's just a locker room that doesn't have a label on the door to say, like, if you have this genitalia, this is the room for you. We're just treating it as a safe space.
And I think, like, yeah, we talk about safe space, and that's the one side, but also for that 12-year-old kid who has to face that every time they walk in, and this is just one example of phys ed class, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sport. When they have to face that every time, and I'm using the word traumatize and re-traumatize, that is not an exaggeration, right? Someone recently said to me, like, oh, I think we're throwing around the word traumatize too much. When it comes to the conversation that we're currently discussing, re-traumatization is exactly what happens, right? Trauma doesn't have to be what's considered, like, big T trauma, right? Like, abuse or natural disaster or, right, all these things that we would, like, openly consider traumatic. If you are on the receiving end of consistent aggression, consistently people denying or refusing to affirm your gender over a period of time, the impact on your body and brain is the same as your big T trauma, right? So using that word for kids who are constantly having to face this is not an exaggeration.
No.
It is true, right? And so creating spaces for them is not being progressive. It is just being empathetic.
Human.
It is the basic, it's a human right to not be constantly targeted and re-traumatized in these shameful ways.
Ooh. Passionate.
And then that's at the school level, right? And so when we talk about the policy level and the legal level, like when we talk about policies and laws that prohibit trans participation in sport, and we said last time, it's not about sport. It's really not. It is about denying the existence and dignity of trans, non-binary, intersex, genderqueer people, mm-hmm. right? It is masked as sport policy and protection of athletes, but at the very root of it, it is fear.
Yeah.
Fear divides, and that is the goal of homophobic policy and transphobic policy,
yeah.
right? And so I know that I talked about this one to you and a few people, but there's an amazing episode that, audience, we would love you to watch. It's about 40 minutes. It's by Jon Stewart. So Jon Stewart was the old host of The Daily Show. Mm-hmm. And so he has a show now that's called The Problem with Jon Stewart. It's on Apple TV Plus. And there's an episode that's called The War on Gender. And he talks about, among a number of things, how, you know, in interviews with endocrinologists and psychiatrists and gynecologists and a whole whack of professionals and doctors who all say, because we know it to be true, that trans, non-binary, intersex, all the other variations on the spectrum of sex and gender are all normal human variation, right? This is not woke. It's not us trying to create, right,
yeah.
space. It is biologically, scientifically normal and true,
yeah.
right?
And no one is making it up.
No one's making it up. And so your listeners of this podcast, I doubt you think that these things are made up, but we encourage you to start thinking about them with more gusto, with more intentional action, I think, because a quote from the show, he says, whatever discomfort we may feel in the changing norms of reality, it is no match for the discomfort and fear felt by those seeking acceptance.
Which I think is huge.
That's huge.
In your words, actually. You always say things are huge.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, you do.
But it really is.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that's a line that's like, let that be shocking. Right? Let that sit on your heart.
Yeah.
I'm so emotional, I just want to bawl my eyes out. But let it sit on your heart for that 12-year-old.
Yeah.
Right? Who literally has nowhere to go. Oh. And like, again, in the show, and we don't have a lot of time left, but he says, and this is America statistics, but like, anti-trans legislation, guys, in the U.S. has increased over 800% in the last 4 years. And specifically anti-trans sports legislation. There has been over 77 bans introduced just this year
yeah.
against trans athletes. Like, it is a war on trans people in sports.
And we might think, oh, it's across the border. It's not in Canada where we live. But at the same time, we have such a link with the United States, the media that we kind of consume, the ideologies that are kind of spread, it does impact Canada.
100%. And even like, yes, Canada's doing some good things. So for example, we have like BC and Ontario Volleyball Association, these small associations who are putting policy in writing that athletes participate on the team with a gender with which they identify, right? And that's super, super, super important. And we're going to get into a little bit more of that maybe in the intro of next time. We got a little serious. Hopefully you stayed with us. We love you. Be gentle on you. Be gentle on us. And just love other people, right?
We're all human.
We're all human. Ugh. And
toodles.